This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Borg. During the coming hour, we're talking with the Republican and Democratic candidates to represent Iowa's 3rd Congressional District, a contest getting national attention as incumbent Democrat Leonard Boswell, now completing 14 years in the House of Representatives, campaigns for another 2 years, and is bucking midterm election sentiment that seems difficult for incumbents, especially Democrats. His Republican opponent, Brad Zaughan, the former mayor of Urbandale, is now a state senator. The 3rd District includes the cities of Des Moines, Marshalltown, Grundy Center, Vinton, Marengo, Pella, and Oskaloosa, among others. It's congressional campaign politics, Boswell and Zaughan on The Exchange. First, news. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dean Borg, in for Ben Kiefer. Today, a conversation with the candidates vying for the U.S. congressional seat in Iowa's 3rd District. In the second part of today's program, I'm talking with incumbent Democrat Leonard Boswell of Des Moines. He's a veteran both militarily and of politics, seeking an 8th term now in the U.S. House of Representatives. But first, his opponent, Republican Brad Zaughan, an Iowa State Senator from Urbandale. In the 3rd District primary, he won with 42% of the vote in a crowded field of 7 GOP candidates. Zaughan's the former mayor of Urbandale. He spoke with Iowa Public Radio's Jeff Schmidt, saying he's running for the 3rd congressional seat because of what he calls runaway spending in Washington.
I think with the country is heading the wrong direction, and I am on a mission. I'm so concerned about the spending that's going on in Washington, D.C., and I can just tell you this didn't happen overnight. I think Iowans are sick and tired of place and blame one place or one party over the other party, and I have got 5 kids, and secondly, I can tell you I don't think that that Congressman Boswell is listening to the constituents, and I don't think his votes are as representative of the people of the 3rd Congressional District.
We'll get into a lot of the issues here momentarily. There were a lot of Republicans in the primary in the 3rd District where you emerged victorious. What set you apart from those others?
Well, I'll tell you, I have been on the ballot this 7 different times, and I am a very tenacious campaigner. Certainly, you have to recognize that I come from Polk County, and a lot of the votes come out of Polk County. But I just think that I played smarter, and I worked harder. And, I had some great people that I ran against, and we just did the hard work that needs to be done. I've always been outspent in every race that I've been involved in, including the current race I'm in. And I've got an incredible grassroots organization.
You, as we look into your background, you're a former business owner, small business. How does that experience lend itself to what you're trying to do now?
Well, I think it's so important to have, small family-owned business people that are representing us in government. And that was kind of what propelled me to run for city council and mayor of Urbandale. I just got frustrated about the process and certainly very concerned as a business owner of the tax climate I had in Urbandale. And I think that, and I've said this on the Senate floor many times, I think there needs to be more people that represent us that have signed the front side of a paycheck. I think that corporations are certainly, they hire lobbyists and they're being represented very well, but the family-owned small mom-and-pop businesses in the state of Iowa, I just don't think that they're being represented, and most of the time they get the short end of the stick.
Well, we can talk into the specifics and politics, but I wanted to get into, we talked about you emerging from the 3rd District among a lot of Republicans. As we get closer to the general election and we look at the GOP, your party, how does the Tea Party play into this, and what's your view on the impact that could have come Election Day?
Well, I would tell you that, I don't know that I was the Tea Party favorite in the primary. I believe that most everybody, at least the people part of the organization, are 100% behind my campaign. I think, there's really, who is a Tea Party person? I would say that I am one. I think it's just government that's out of touch and the spending that's out of control. And I think I represent an average Iowan. And I think people have kind of identified with the Tea Party because of their frustration. And I've been to the Tea Party rallies, and it's just people that are frustrated. I don't think that it's Republicans more so than Democrats. I think it's just a mix of Democrats, Republicans, and independents.
Talking about some of the issues, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act was signed into law by the president last March, health care reform legislation. You've talked about replacing that law entirely. Is there nothing part of that law that you would support?
Well, certainly I think that the lifetime caps was a step in the right direction, and being able to move from one insurance company to the other insurance company is a positive. But the bottom line here is I think that the United States Congress just went about this wrong. I mean, we have the best health care system in the world. I mean, people come here from all over the place. And I think that, we need to make some changes. There definitely is some problems with our health care system in the United States. And I think what's really unfortunate is, A, we cannot afford that. I mean, we're talking the Congressional Budget Office has estimated this will cost over $2 trillion. We were told all along that we would be able to keep the insurance that we have, and you saw what has happened in the state of Iowa in regards to Principal Financial laying off 1,500 people by getting out of the health insurance business. I've been told there's over six other companies in the state of Iowa that has done the same thing, and not to mention the $500 billion that was taken out of Medicare. The 21,000 people that were told here about a week ago that they no longer will have Medicare Advantage. And so I think that was disingenuous for the Congress and the president to do that. But we do need to make some changes. I mean, I would be interested in just defunding the 159 different programs and agencies that have been created by this bill, certainly the over 10,000 IRS agents. But with that said, it's my responsibility and whoever's in charge there to lead to make sure that there is some changes that are made in healthcare. And I plan on being part of that group of people.
You will probably admit, though, this was not a something that landed at the feet of the Democrats. Republicans share equally in not being able to draft something that was finally arrived on last March.
Well, I can't speak for what has been done in the past in Washington, D.C., and not familiar. I know that they offered some alternatives, and I'm not quite sure that I supported what they offered. But I can tell you that I've done it in the Iowa Senate. We do need to make some changes. I mean, immediately we should be able to buy our health insurance across state lines and as well some tort reform. And we need to come together as a group in Washington, D.C., because I think the people of America are saying, you know, we're sick and tired of this bickering that's going on both sides of the aisle. And we need to send people to Washington, D.C. that gets in there, does it, and doesn't think about the reelection on all the issues that we have during this next few years.
You mentioned your work in the Iowa legislature. You introduced an Iowa amendment to repeal health care legislation, which leads to that question on states' rights versus federal control. Talk a bit about where you stand on that.
Well, I did offer an amendment to be able to exempt the state of Iowa. I think it's a violation of the Constitution, and certainly I got up on the Senate floor and I read the 10th Amendment. And I think that we need to make sure that we protect states' rights. I could tell you that our founding fathers had clear direction on how they wanted government to be healthy and to work together, and I thought that was a violation.
The mantra from the GOP, maybe even louder this election than in past, is to rein in government spending. You touched on it. Outside of Obama's health care plan, where do we even begin to start looking on making some of these cuts?
Well, I'll tell you what we've got to do is immediately you need to look at the czars that have been created. We could immediately defund the Obamacare. We could definitely we need to make a lot of changes. I mean, you're talking we just sent $50 billion to Greece through the IMF, and we've got a lot of, I think when I'm out campaigning, what I talk about is that I want to make sure that we prioritize what services the people of the state of Iowa expect out of their government. And the simple questions that I ask in the process is we put all the programs. There's some negotiables and some non-negotiables with me. The non-negotiables would be Social Security and Medicare. We've got to make sure that we have a healthy fund, a healthy trust fund, and we've got to get rid of the people that are in there that are digging into that trust fund in Washington, D.C. The second thing we got to do is we have to have a healthy infrastructure in the United States. I mean, that's what drives our economy. Thirdly, we have got to secure our borders. And then fourth, I would say that we've got to have a healthy infrastructure in the United States. It's what drives our economy. But with that said, I think we need to put all the programs out there. There's no long-range plan for the United States. And this is what I did as mayor of Urbandale. We had a long-range plan. We knew what we were going to be doing, you know, 3 to 5 years out. And then you look at all those programs, and the simple question that I'm going to ask myself is, are these programs worthy of passing that expense on to my kids as well as all the younger people of this country? And if the answer is no, then we shouldn't have that program.
I know I've heard you criticize a number of times the lack of a long-range plan by the federal government. Expound on that and maybe talk about this current system we have in place, Republicans and Democrats, the dissatisfaction expressed on both sides. What is it that you're presenting that would be anything different than you know what we've heard from both sides of the aisle?
Well, first of all, you recognize that we didn't get in this overnight, and certainly the blame lies across party lines. I don't really care about where the blame is. I can tell you that what I'll do is I've got a simple plan. Too many people that go to Washington, D.C. worry and make their decisions based on reelection. I am on a mission for my kids and for all the younger people. My plan is simple. I'm going to get a sofa that folds up into a bed, and I'm going to sleep in my office. And I want to get home, number one, be with my family, but most importantly, I want to be home with the constituents that sent me to Washington, D.C. And I think too many of our elected officials get too comfortable with that lifestyle out in Washington, D.C. And I've had my arm twisted in the Iowa Senate or mayor, and I've had so many people try to influence me, you know, once I've got all the information I need and made my decision where I'm going to vote. And I've been threatened. And I always go back to what's best for the people that I represent. And I've never made decisions based on reelection. And there's some that say that I'm controversial. But the fact of the matter is we've got to send people out there to do the right thing and to rein in this spending, or our country is in big trouble. We're already bankrupt, and we've got to send new leadership to Washington, D.C.
How do you respond to that argument that the current political system is broke with partisanship destroying everything and the atmosphere is not even there for things to get done?
I agree with it. You know, I think what would be really good for this country, depending on how this election turns out, I think that the Republicans are going to gain majority there, where assuming that John Boehner is the speaker and Nancy Pelosi is the minority leader, how refreshing it would be if they both sat down before the session started and said, you know, let's say John's the speaker and say to Nancy, listen, I want you to go back to your caucus and I want you to find three things that your caucus feels very passionate about. And you leave your left-wing stuff at home, and I'll leave my right-wing stuff at home, and let's work together. And then we work together with those agenda or those issues that you know the minority party has. And I think that the civility is just gone in Washington, D.C. And you know, in the Iowa Senate, there's been occasions where I don't think the Republicans are right. And what I do is I tell them that they're not right, and I go out and I cross party lines because I think it's best for the people I represent.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Republican congressional candidate Brad Zahn. He's facing incumbent Leonard Boswell in Iowa's 3rd congressional district. Some more ideas. Taxes very much in the news, very much in the conversation. Where do you stand on taxes? And obviously that leads to the extension of a possibility on the Bush tax cuts.
Well, first of all, we have got to attack the spending problem first before we start looking at the tax structure that the IRS has got set forth right now. You know, when 47% of the population are not paying their federal income taxes, we got a problem. It's about fairness here. I think that we need to look at our tax code system in the United States. And in regards to the tax increase, which will be the largest tax increase in the history of the United States, which would happen January 1, I would be supportive of extending the current rate that everybody pays. And I think it's really unfortunate, considering that this is such a huge issue for so many individuals and businesses out there, that the Congress didn't do the hard work that they needed to do and adjourned early because they're more concerned. And Congressman Boswell voted to adjourn because he's more concerned about his job in Washington, D.C., rather than the 114,000 Iowans that are unemployed currently.
How far would you go with an overall blowing up the system? And we talk about real tax reform.
Well, you know, there's several proposals out there. There's flat tax, there's fair tax, and I wouldn't say that I'm really excited about one over the other. I think we just need to sit down and have a conversation, and certainly a conversation with the people of the state of Iowa on, you know, get their input on what system that they want. You know, right now it's broken. And we need to make sure that we make some changes there. And it's just really unfortunate that we put the American people right now. I understand that the tax codes books are being printed up right now. And it's going to be really, if Congress would have done their work, we wouldn't have this problem where we're going to have to reprint, assuming that there's some extensions that will be made.
With one of your priorities being a check on government spending, where do you stand on America's role in Afghanistan? And that obviously leads to the bigger question on military spending. What your thoughts on what the president has done with Afghanistan?
Well, you know, first of all, I think it's unfortunate what happened in Iraq in regards to the money that was left on the table for rebuilding Iraq. We need to have a strong, efficient military, and the emphasis on efficient. And, you know, thank you for all the good, hardworking friends and neighbors and people that are defending our country. It's admirable. We need to take care of those people, and they need to have the right resources to win. And in regards to what you're talking about Afghanistan, you know, I certainly will tell you that the way we get out of there is when we win. And the definition for win for me is that when the government in Afghanistan is able to take over the responsibility that we're currently providing right now. What I do strongly object to is what Congressman Boswell, and I salute his service to our country, but he should know better, and that is sending our troops out there and then playing politics and voting against funding. We've got a lot of problems in Afghanistan, and I would just say the rules of engagement would be one example of that. And so, you know, I want to make sure that we get in there, we supply our military forces with the correct resources they need. I want to make my decisions based on General Petraeus and the people that have their boots on the ground in Afghanistan in regards to I'm not there, and certainly I want to make sure that we get out of there, and we want to get out of there as soon as we can, but we need to make sure that if it takes a surge in the troops there, which Congressman Boswell voted against, which we know works, that we continue to do that.
You mentioned illegal immigration earlier. Where do you stand on the process for securing our borders, and does your plan include amnesty in some form?
Okay, well, first of all, we can't do anything with illegal immigration until we secure our borders. And if we need the National Guard down there or whatever that is, I have my sister who lives in Phoenix, Arizona, who watches the Arizona TV shows, which we're not seeing everything that goes on down there. There's people that are being killed on that border every day. We need to make sure that we have a process in place that's efficient. I do not and will not support amnesty. But what I want everyone to go through, and they're good, hardworking people, obviously there's jobs are coming up here for. We need to make sure that we keep the employers that are breaking the law responsible for that. And we have also got to make sure that this is a process. And I just give the example of when I was up in Tama County when I talked to a farmer that said that he has someone here from the guest worker program, and he sent him down to Des Moines and paid him over 50 hours to go through that paperwork headache. If we have a paperwork problem, we need to look at that. We need to address that situation. Secondly, I would be very interested in looking at the cap that is right there, you know, currently is in place. You know, maybe we need to raise that cap. I always want everybody to be legal citizens, go through the process, and I want to make sure that that they have the opportunity to get through that process and become American citizens. I mean, we are, we are all immigrants, and we all went through our ancestors went through a process where, you know, and I think that there is a process in place, and I just want to make sure that there it's fine-tuned so people could become citizens.
Well, and secondly, and I want to be clear on this. So it sounds like you say you do not support amnesty, but you do support a system that is put in place that would allow people that are over here to work to get into our system?
Well, there is a current system already in place for those people to come over here. My big concern is what that farmer told me up in Tama County in regards to it's a paperwork headache. I want to make sure that they go through the process. I want to make sure that we look at possibly increasing the cap. I want them to become citizens, and I want them to become contributing citizens of the United States.
Although this is an issue that's being decided on the state level, you've been quite open with your opinions on the retention vote with three of the seven Iowa Supreme Court justices. Why do you support the removal of those justices?
Well, I'll tell you, we had a lot of discussion about this in the Iowa legislature this last year and previous year as well. What I think was unfortunate, and it's not personal against those people, but the clear intention of the Iowa legislature, this was done years before I was in the legislature, is there in the Iowa code it defines marriage between one man and one woman. And I think that the Supreme Court crossed the line, and certainly I think that they were legislating from the bench, and I think what they did was unconstitutional.
So would you support a federal marriage amendment?
Yes, I would. And I would tell you, I would say normally I would not. And the reason why is because I think it should be left up to the states to figure this out. But with what happened in California, where it was the clear intention of the voters of California to define a marriage between one man and one woman, and then you had an activist judge that overruled that, I think there might be a situation where or an opportunity where maybe the federal government needs to get involved.
Before I let you go, I wanted to get your take on the biodiesel tax break. You and your opponent differ somewhat on whether the federal tax break for soybean-based biodiesel should be revived. Talk a little bit about where you stand on that.
Well, first of all, I think that that industry is a very youthful, you know, a very youthful program. And the industry is very youthful. I think that the ethanol industry is certainly with what the USDA or what was what was just brought out of Washington, D.C. in regards to that the potential to go to E15 on cars that are year 2007 and younger. I think that the ethanol and the biofuels industry is good for the state of Iowa. What is strongly objected to the biodiesel is I'm ranking member of the Ways and Means Committee, and I learned a lot through that process on a bill that was brought forward in regards to a biodiesel mandate. What my biggest concerns and what I heard is that the engine manufacturers are saying that the warranty is out if this biodiesel goes in. I'm a market-driven person. I'm not going to support any mandate that tell the consumer what to buy, either be biodiesel or if they buy ethanol. I think if it's a good product, people will buy it. Secondly, I am not going to be interested in telling Detroit how to build their cars or engine manufacturers how to build their engines. I am not going to be supportive of the $1 tax credit for the biofuels industry until they mature more. And certainly the ethanol industry, if I'm elected, I will support the 45-cent tax credit that expires at the end of this year.
Brad Zahn, we are out of time. We appreciate you joining us today on Iowa Public Radio.
Well, it's an honor to be here. Thank you very much.
That's Brad Zahn, the Republican candidate in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Coming up next, I'm talking with his opponent, incumbent Democrat Leonard Boswell. I'm Dean Borg. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dean Borg, continuing the exchange with Iowa 3rd District Congressman Leonard Boswell now. He's a Democrat from Des Moines. Hello, Congressman Boswell.
Hello, Dean. Nice to hear your voice.
You've been through many political campaigns, Congress 14 years, 10 years in the Iowa legislature. With that experience, you know, people are saying this is sort of a different campaign season. How do you assess it? How do you describe the voter mood this year?
Well, it's a very challenging time, Dean, and there's a lot of unrest because of the recession. Thank heavens we didn't go into a depression like we had in the 30s, and I'm thankful for that. But it's put a lot of stress on people, and we feel that. They feel it. We're doing multiple things trying to relieve some of that stress, and I think we are. But it's a stressful time.
You're taking that stress out on incumbents. Do you think that's justified? Obviously, you probably would not, since you're an incumbent.
Well, probably not, because that's a human element. You know, you've been around a long time, as I, and when things are changed and you can't have immediate influence on it, why you get worried and then you get frustrated, and then human nature, you get angry, and so that's going on, but. We're working very hard to relieve some of that frustration, and I think we're having some success.
There is an Associated Press report out today saying that the current Congress really was one of the most productive in recent years, and yet you wouldn't hear that listening to voters.
Well, I think the 111th Congress has been productive, and I think that's correct when you look at some of the issues, which I assume we'll be talking about, that been kicking the can down the road as if we didn't know what was going on. Well, we needed to do something, and we finally got the leadership in place that was willing to make hard decisions, and they are hard. But you got to do that whether when you're in the leadership situation, you've got to lead. And so I was pretty pleased when this new president come in with a bucket full of problems, but there he was, and a year ago February, and he made the comment with me and others, we're not going to kick the can down the road. I hope you'll work with me when we get through this and get this wonderful country of ours back on its feet.
But, Congressman, you aren't campaigning on your support for what has been the hallmark legislation of the Obama administration, and that is changes in the nation's health care system. And you said, we're going to be talking about some of the things that happened in the current Congress. That's probably the most prominent one right there. Why aren't you trumpeting your support for that?
Well, I absolutely am. I am not running from it at all. I thought it was an imperative thing to do. We needed to do it. I didn't just learn, and you didn't either, that in the last few months that we had to deal with this, that the costs were escalating, and it was causing a lot of bankruptcies across the country and needed to be dealt with. And we couldn't get anything going on it with the previous administration. This one said we'll take it on, and so we worked very hard to do that, and I'm very pleased that I was there to work on it. The disparity for reimbursement, for example, for Medicare to Iowa physicians, hospitals, and so on was just unheard of. We got a fix going on, and we could go on and talk about a lot of other details if you like.
Well, but it gets down to whatever happened to the perceived advantage of running on an incumbent's record. And the commercials I see seem to be vilify Mr. Zahn.
I see where you're going now. Yeah. I see where you're going, and let me respond to that. I think that's a fair point. As I was working to deal with the Wall Street debacle, to deal with the health care issue, to deal with the economy, Mr. Zahn was out there kind of vilifying that what we were doing was bad, scare tactics. Folks, the sky is falling on you, and look at these terrible things you're trying to do. And I thought, when you put fear into people, particularly with our seniors and families with children, I don't like that. And I thought, why is he doing this, and so on. But I had to wait, and we kept going on. Then they had their primary, and he won that, and which surprised some of the people at the national level on the Republican side, they tell me. I don't know if that's true or not, but by the way, I had to learn about this guy. And so as I learned about it, watching and so on, he was saying things that did not connect. And so I thought, well, we got to at least show the Iowans, the 3rd District, who this really is. And I had no choice but to do that, and that's what we've tried to do, using his own expressions, his own statements of who he really is, and that's the best reason I can give you. We felt like they need to know. You know who I am. You've been watching me operate for a long time, the state legislature and the Congress and my years in the military and so on. So I think everybody knows who Leonard Boswell is, but I don't think they knew who Mr. Zahn is. And so based on that introduction to him, I felt like we had to do that.
I'm going to go back then specifically to something Mr. Zahn said in the first part of our program. He may not have used the word reckless, but he was insinuating that Congress has been fiscally reckless and cited especially Medicare and Social Security as priorities that need to be protected. How do you respond to that, if you can use my words in interpreting fiscally reckless?
Well, I don't think it was reckless at all. I think it was there's some risk involved. What we can talk about the health care reform or the affordable health care or the Wall Street situation, but the economy was really whacked with what happened on Wall Street. And when people are putting emphasis on paper trading and derivatives and not things that people can manufacture and make and deliver. And it was headed south at a terrible pace. And, you've heard me say, Dean, that I thought at first, well, those rascals, they did it, just let them suffer. But I remembered what my father and my grandfather said about the Depression. And I remembered what it was like to come back when I got out of the Army to come home to hit the farm crisis. I went down and walked through the FDR Memorial and pretty stark about what happens in the Depression. I didn't want to go there. I thought, my gosh, if we're in that situation it looked like we were, I want to fight back. I want to do something. And so I went back to our caucus. I said, after I related all that, and that's a short version of it, and said, if we're going down, let's go down fighting. And maybe we won't. Maybe we can turn this thing back. And so we worked very hard on it, and I think we are turning it back. We got more to do. But, we're making progress, and you try to think about what would have happened if we'd have done nothing. And that's what Mr. Zahn said, do nothing. I don't want to go there. And the whole idea of going, just accepting it and let the chips fall, all the unemployment, the lineup for people to get care, it would have been so much worse. And so we can go into some detail if you want, but it was not the place to go.
Well, speaking of doing nothing, on another subject, Mr. Zahn favors letting the biodiesel and ethanol industries, as he says, stand on their own two feet. Now, why can't these industries compete without government-financed incentives?
Well, Dean, when you stand up a new industry, and there's just a lot of transition takes place and so on, and this is a new industry that had to go against a very big, long-established industry called the oil patch, as we kind of refer to it, but the oil industry, the fossil fuels. And to stand up and take them on, and I've seen it happen, and I'm sure you have too in your position with the public radio and your work, that when they look like they're making some progress, there's those times when they would lower the prices, and they could do it because of their long reach and just take them out. And so you got to have some help there to get them up, to get them established and get them going. And the idea that we don't want to, after what happened in the early 70s and since then, to not get out of the bondage to OPEC is just beyond my understanding. We need to do this, and we can. And we've led here in Iowa, and I've been involved in it for a long, long time, and I'll stay involved in it. We've got to get out of bondage to OPEC and develop all the alternatives, not just the biodiesel, absolutely biodiesel and ethanol and cellulosic and wind and solar and all those possibilities, the use of metro waste. Well, there's so many things yet still out there we're going to be able to do.
Can we afford it?
But biodiesel is something that we can get from many sources of stock. Mm-hmm. And we can grow it out of the ground. We can do it. And when that industry was kind of getting on its feet and moving forward, and to not get this extenders taking place was the wrong thing. There's 80,000 people out there without work, and that expertise, we're going to lose it. We don't want to lose that. We've got to hang on to it. We've got to get going, and we've got to get out of bondage.
I want to invite our listeners, if they have a question for Congressman Boswell, we may be able to squeeze in one or two. It's 866-780-9100. Again, 866-780-9100. I want to give you a chance to respond to another thing that Mr. Zahn said earlier in our program. It was something like playing politics and voting against funding for troops in Afghanistan and also against increasing, he called it the surge, but I don't think it's actually called the surge there like it was in Iraq, but at least increasing the troop commitment to Afghanistan. You're an Army veteran, retired lieutenant colonel, flew assault helicopters in Vietnam. If you could turn back the clock, do you feel strongly enough or not? Would you sign up to fight the U.S. commitment with NATO in Afghanistan?
I would. It was from Afghanistan that bin Laden attacked our country. That's what happened to the Twin Towers in New York. That's where it came from, and you can't just ignore something like that. The thing that happened after that is the administration at the time decided they want to go ahead and get involved in the Iraq situation and pulled so much of the effort away from Afghanistan when we really had bin Laden on the run and almost ready to put our hands on him.
So you believe in the commitment then. How about voting against, as he alleges, funding for troops and increasing the commitment there?
I'll never vote against the troops. I've been there, been done that. I'll never vote against the troops. But I think we have to do this, Dean. I think we've had all these years now, and regardless of errors we made by transferring the emphasis to Iraq when we didn't need to, but it was done. We're back dealing where this trouble started with terrorism, and bin Laden's still out there. And the Afghanistan government has got to make some choices. And I think they're getting pretty close to that cross or that T in the road. They got to choose. Do they want to have the better life and get away from the tribal stuff, quit abusing their women and their children and have the chance to have utilities where they can turn the switch and the lights will come on and have that kind of life? They're going to have to make a choice because we cannot afford, nor do we, should we, continue to do this for on and on. So right now there's a lot of training going on. I have a lot of contact. I'll give you a name. I could give you several with General Petraeus, but mostly with General Caldwell and his responsibility. And I know him because he was commandant at the Command General Staff College. And as you know, I was down there for a very special thing last year. And we got acquainted. We got reacquainted. And he's over there now at the request of General Petraeus to train the police, Afghanis, to work with other NATO countries to train their army and so on and get that done. I think that's very important. We'll do that for this period of time, and then we're going to have to bring our troops home. That we just cannot stay there.
How long is that? How long do you think?
You know, it's hard to put a timeline on, but I don't think it's very far away.
So it's circumstances that'll dictate that, not a timeline.
Circumstances have a lot to do with it. I'll give you an example of some of the circumstances. The literacy. The literacy in Iraq, for example, is very high. In Afghanistan, it's very low. And General Caldwell just gave an example. An Afghani troop was out in the field. They were engaged. They were doing fine, but they were holding their own. They needed some air support or some artillery, and it was available. And the Afghani leader had radio. He had a map. But he could not tell anybody where he was. He wasn't literate to do it. Mm-hmm. That's almost hard to believe for folks like yourself and I, but that's the case. They got to deal with that, and they got the process going on, General Caldwell tells me, but this has to be done. Well, it'll take a little time to do that. They got to have set up their education system, and they got it going.
I want to get us back, if you can, Congressman, to the 3rd District, because we're only limited here on time. Geographically, as I've said already earlier in the program, you're living in Des Moines, and that district stretches eastward and southeastward, includes Marshalltown, Tama, Grundy Center, Vinton, Marengo, Grinnell, Newton, Pella, and Oskaloosa, to name a few. That gives our listeners an idea.
Leave out Marshalltown. Doesn't include Marshalltown.
All right.
No, not anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
So from metropolitan Des Moines through a lot of rural communities, not Marshalltown, when you talk about providing jobs in the 3rd District, and, you know, this election seems to be about employment in this country.
That's a very, very important. And just for example, I listened to your advertisement that was on here on public radio a little while ago about Kemen Industries, a great industry, international, and they're right here in the 3rd District, and they need some work done to get their accessibility, to get their goods in and out where they're located here in the southeast side. And the southeast connector, the bridge and the road network out there, I've got my fingerprints on that. We're working hard to help them on that. And I had the pleasure of being at a Kemen meeting in D.C. a few months back where they had brought people from around the world in and sat with the family in the evening and met some of those people. And it's a great thing. And those jobs will be high-paying jobs, good jobs, and will really help our economy. Out in Newton, you know, the things that happened out there with Maytag was very regretful, but a lot of effort with wind energy going on there, using those facilities and so on, and the idea that Marsh might expand out there. Wow, that'll be great. And so we'll continue to do what we can to make sure they have the incentives and sense of the tax helps for starting a new company. I think that's something that we brought out very clearly when we worked with the Affordable Health Care Act that will help small businesses, and this is a good thing. And so I feel very hopeful.
Let me speak.
I feel very hopeful that we can move forward, and that's where we want to go. We want to go forward.
Still on jobs, but over in the eastern side of your district specifically, and I go back now to the Air Force tanker. The KC-135 is 50 years old, and two aircraft builders, Boeing and European-based Airbus, are intensely competing for billions of dollars in building that new Air Force tanker. If European-based Airbus gets the contract, how would you take the news knowing that jobs in your district are really affected, particularly your constituents in Benton, Iowa, and Tama counties who commute to Rockwell College and Cedar Rapids?
Well, thank you. At Rockwell College, I was just over there for a meeting they had with Boeing and so on, and that their lineup that they've made with Boeing to be able to provide those avionics for those new aircraft. And it's a big, big, big item, but Rockwell College is one of the premier producers of avionics for aviation in the world. In fact, I have personally used a lot of their equipment, I think, in back over my years of flying and so on. And they're a great company, and it will mean a lot. It'll mean an awful lot to us. And
but does it mean, I mean, as a congressman,
yeah,
do you feel that an American company should be getting the priority there?
I do, very much so. I really think so, because we've got to get back to this insourcing, not outsourcing, and get Americans with American hands, if you will, making things. And that's what happens as you've got a place like Rockwell Collins or Kemen or the blade construction or the towers in Newton. You know, those are Americans making people going to work.
But there isn't anything, if that contract goes to Airbus, there isn't anything that you would do in Congress to try to stop it.
Well, I am very supportive of the Boeing operation. I made no bones about it. And, you know, you can talk to Congressman Dix, who's from that part of the world out there where Boeing's got has so much of their emphasis and their Chicago headquarters that they've got now. And it's clear that Leonard Boswell is supporting that we want this to be American-made with American hands.
Another thing, I'm moving very rapidly here because there's so much to talk about. You've been hinting that with corn prices now above $5 a bushel, that some changes in the federal farm program price supports may be in order, but you're also quick to say farmers need a safety net. So I know that your background is in farming in southern Iowa, and you serve on the House Subcommittee on Farm Commodities. What changes do you see in the offing?
Well, we're working very hard on that, and, you know, I am a hands-on. I still have a farm operation in southern Iowa, which I'm very close to, and anyway, I know a lot about it, and it's a crucial time. And the thing that the farmer has is so capital intensive. It is a business. It's, you know, small business, bigger business. Contrast to my opponent saying, inferring that farmers aren't business people. Come on, give me a break. You know, we really take a lot of risk, and we got the business things we've got to do, plus we got to deal with weather and bugs and everything
else. But specifically, Congressman, and
okay,
excuse me for pressing you, what about our farm price supports on their way out?
I think so. I think probably what we're going to see here is the emphasis on that safety net, being be sure that there is, in the risk management side of it, there's the available, accessible, and affordable federal crop, and I think that's where we got to make our emphasis. But we're doing hearings right now to be sure that we're saying to the producers and the processors of agriculture of America, and we're going to probably have to draw back some. So where do you want to put your priorities in there? Talking to us, and we're going to keep that process going, and I think we'll do the right thing.
Mr. Zahn's accusing you of voting the same way as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi 98% of the time. Is that saying we've gone through, you know, your district largely rural, although it does include Des Moines, is that saying that your constituents' interests are closely aligned with those of her San Francisco constituents?
Not at all. Not, that is so political and so preposterous. She's probably got a lot of trouble with her own district because San Francisco is so different, and it's a very liberal district, and she's probably got some problems out there because in her leadership role, and she came to people like me and said, you know, what are the some things we need to do?
Well,
like,
let me give you
back
a free
PAYGO. Come, well, you know, really.
Would you support legalizing medical marijuana?
Would I?
Yeah. If Nancy Pelosi was promoting that.
No, we've covered that before. Okay. I'm not ready to deal with that.
Let me just add a final question here. Why should voters send you back to Congress?
Wait a minute. You said marijuana, but you said medical marijuana.
I did.
Well, if the science and the physicians and so on say that there's some use for medical, yes, I think that would have some possibilities. But as far as just making marijuana legal across the board, I would have to say no.
Well, Congressman, we're just about out of time. In 15 seconds, tell me why you would tell a voter to send you back to Congress instead of Mr. Zahn.
Well, we got a very challenging time, and I don't know when in my life I've been more prepared to deal with this. So the experience I've had, whether it's been to war, living outside the country, this global situation, the challenge of our economy to get Americans back to work making things with American hands, and understanding that agriculture is such a big item in our state and our country, and I've certainly got the most experience to deal with that. I'm in a very key position.
Thank you, Congressman. That I have to break
okay.
in. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer, assisted today by Christina Sonnelli and Jonathan Alden, Des Moines, Dennis Reese in Iowa City. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us today.